Today's podcast of The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
Thousands of troops are on the move in Afghanistan. With the Afghans in the lead, soldiers from NATO are pouring into Helmand Province, poised to launch a major offensive to drive the Taliban from Marja. Far from a surprise attack, this operation has been publicized well in advance. We're joined now by retired Colonel Sam Gardner. He taught military strategy at the National War College and the Naval War College. Good morning.
Good morning.
What do you think about this strategy of publicizing this offensive in advance in order to give insurgents a chance to flee?
Not the invasion of Normandy. This is an operation that reflects the complexities of Afghanistan. Part of the reason for the notification is so that President Karzai can't back out of the operation. Part of the reason for the notification is to give mid-level Taliban a chance to turn sides. Another reason is that the United States would like the civilians to stay in place and the Afghans want the civilians to leave. Complexity of the Afghan problem.
It is a complex problem. Retired Colonel Sam Gardner, stay with us. We'll be talking with you more details. The Marja offensive begins in Afghanistan. It's The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee from Public Radio International and WNYC.
Good morning. It's Wednesday, February 10th, and the takeaway for me, John, is that comparisons fall apart when you get to Afghanistan. It is complex, as Sam Gardner said, and you can't compare it with other offensives.
Well, you'll have to see if those things actually take place, if the civilians do stay, if the Taliban does flee, and if publicizing the invasion isn't more of a mistake because it actually signals that the Taliban can go run and hide. But let's get right to the headlines we're following this morning, and that's all about a big snowstorm that's sweeping the Northeast this morning, as much as a foot of snow, additional snow to Washington, D.C. Baltimore and Philadelphia are in the mix. The snow is even falling here in New York City. We're joined now by Greg Shore, meteorologist at the National Weather Service. He's in Sterling, Virginia, near Dulles Airport. Greg, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
So where does this storm track now, and is it going to peak later on in the morning, or have we seen the worst?
Well, the second round of basically round two is starting right now. It's, over the past hour, we've had snow bands just sort of developing straight around us, all the way from Lake Erie down into Southern Virginia, back up toward New York City. The whole area is just filling in with light to moderate snow. We had an average of about 2 to 4 inches overnight late last night. Then we had a brief lull, not much activity, so it seemed like not much was happening. But then in the past hour, just as we'd predicted, the surface low just off the coast is deepening rapidly, and that's going to pick up winds this afternoon. We've got some blizzard warnings for, like, the Baltimore metro area all the way over into parts of the central Appalachians, and we are looking to see another couple of inches over the metro areas, maybe.
So this storm has a chance, at the very least, to deliver what was promised. It's certainly a huge storm, that's for sure. Greg Shore, meteorologist at the National Weather Service, speaking to us about this eastern storm from Sterling, Virginia.
The crisis engulfing Toyota is threatening to hit new tights. There's another recall to tell you about, this time for more than 7,000 2010 Camrys that also have a problem with the brakes. And on top of that, government safety officials now say they're looking into a number of complaints with the steering on the Toyota Corollas. No official investigation, though, has been opened.
Stormy weather for Toyota. Let's look at the markets. Asian and European markets are up now. Futures are up, too. The Dow gets underway at 10,058. Another rally expected today. The S&P opens at 1,070, and the NASDAQ opens at 2150. Coming up, Valentine's Day, fast approaching. But how do you make a meal for your sweetheart that will knock him or her off their feet? We talk with the Food Network's Gina and Pat Neely later this hour, and I'm telling you, this interview gets hot.
It's a snow day for lots of Americans and thousands upon thousands of American children. Give us your memories of snow days growing up, 8778-MY-TAKE, or you can post it to our site, thetakeaway.org. We get more details of the Marja offensive in Afghanistan in a moment.
You You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
As we speak, thousands of U.S., British, and Afghan soldiers are poised to push into a Taliban stronghold in the area of Marja in Afghanistan's southern Helmand province. The town is one of the last strongholds of the Taliban in this mountainous area, and it's the center of the opium trade for insurgents as well. Traditionally, strategists like to use the element of surprise, but this operation has been widely publicized for at least a week or two in advance. Here's U.S. and NATO Commander Stanley McChrystal speaking a couple days ago.
We're trying to make this not a military operation only, but a civilian and military operation, because really the thing that's changing is going to be the level of security in the area, but the governance.
Let's go now to Captain Abraham Sipe. Captain Sipe is a public affairs officer at Camp Leatherneck in Afghanistan, and the Marines at Camp Leatherneck will form the main column of this assault. Good morning, Captain.
Hey, good morning. How are you today?
Can you respond to this description by General Stanley McChrystal that this is going to be not just a military offensive, but a civilian offensive as well, cooperation with the civilian side? How is the civilian government of Afghanistan coordinating?
It absolutely is going to be both a military and civilian effort. The military portion, the clear portion of the operation is just one small part of an overall strategy to bring Marja back into the fold and return the legitimate government of Afghanistan to a government presence to the city of Marja.
Can you explain the strategy of warning people in advance that this offensive is coming? Is that expected to make the Taliban flee, or is it just the residents that are fleeing the area?
We don't necessarily have a big problem with the enemy fleeing Marja. If the enemy flees Marja, then it'll make it a lot more conducive to us returning and providing those services and returning security and stability to the city. And the numbers of families leaving Marja right now, our estimates are a lot less than what has been reported in the press. But we hope that as soon as possible we can make Marja a place where the citizens feel very safe and secure once we can get the legitimate Afghan national security forces and government returning to the city.
But Captain Sipe, when you warn the enemy in advance, aren't you taking the risk that they're going to dig in their heels, that they're going to hide in various places around the city, that they're going to have time to plant IEDs and other booby traps around the area?
Well, I'll tell you, I've been here for 9 months with Task Force Leatherneck, and Marja has been there the entire time. So it's not, they've been dug in Marja for quite some time. I'm not sure that we think that the added risk that we might be taking by giving a warning is actually going to be outweighed by the benefits of letting the people know that, hey, this is what we're about to do, and we're doing it for the long-term safety and security of your homes and your livelihoods.
We're also told that ISAF is aiming to get a 1-to-1 ratio with one Afghan for every NATO soldier, but number one, can you achieve that? And number two, are these forces, many of them are Pashto recruits that you guys have specifically targeted, are they well-trained? Are they well-equipped?
I'm not going to discuss specific numbers right now, but I can say that we've done one major operation when we started this this deployment. It was called Operation Kanjar in July. And in July, we had about 4,000 ISAF service members partnered with about 650 Afghan National Security Forces. And that's about a 7 or 8 to 1 ratio. I can tell you that the ratios of ISAF to Afghan National Security Forces for this operation are going to be very closer to a 1-to-1 ratio. I don't think that we can say it's a 1-to-1 ratio at this time, and I'm not going to discuss specific numbers, but it will be a large Afghan National Security Force presence during the operation and also after the operation to come in and restore order into the city.
Captain Abraham Sipe is a public affairs officer at Camp Leatherneck in Afghanistan. Let's return now to a military analyst, retired Colonel Sam Gardner. Colonel, I wanted to get your thoughts about this planned offensive in Marja. Do you think this strategy of moving into the Helmand province is a good one?
Well, it's uncontrolled territory. It's not governed by the Afghan government. If the United States' ultimate objective of turning over control to the Afghans is going to be achieved, we got to do it. It's also, as you actually mentioned earlier, a center of opium production. That's a big problem. Although it may not be the primary source of income now for the Taliban, it is a major source of income. So the strategic objectives demand that something be done about it.
Well, could we get into the situation where we're playing whack-a-mole, where we move them out of Marja, they're just going to move their forces to another area and dig in somewhere else?
Oh, certainly. And in fact, that's the danger of the advance notification. However, reports coming from civilians who are fleeing there suggest that that's not happening. The civilians that are coming out are saying that the Taliban are digging in for a big fight. It doesn't look like that's going to happen. Some of the civilians that come out could in fact be Taliban, but it looks like it's going to be a big fight.
Well, we're getting reports that there's somewhere between 400 and 1,000 Taliban in Marja. If they're digging in, doesn't the Taliban really have everything to gain here, even if they lose soldiers, in terms of being treated like a real, respectable, credible insurgent force? Isn't that, in terms of PR, a good thing for them?
Well, the real critical thing is how the Afghans react. This is as much a test of the Afghan police and military as it is a test for, the General McChrystal's strategy. How they perform is what we need to watch very carefully.
Okay, return to Colonel Sam Gardner. He taught military strategy at the National War College and at the Naval War College. We are also joined earlier by Captain Abraham Sipe, Deputy Public Affairs Officer at Camp Levin in Afghanistan. Captain Sipe, are you still there?
I am, yes.
When does the offensive really actually begin? The official offensive?
I've not been doing this job for that long, but I can't. I know not the answer to one of those.
You don't know that.
Just a test. Just a test. There, that's all we're doing. And I love your cell phone. What is that on your cell phone?
The ring, you mean?
I'm
yeah.
not sure what you're referring
there's
to.
A, yeah. There's a great cell
a
phone ring.
Catchy
yeah.
cell phone yeah. ring. We were wondering if that was
Righteous
yours.
Soul.
Oh, did you catch that? Yeah.
yeah.
That's, I've got I literally have five phones on my desk, and in order for me to tell which one.
They'll be ringing today.
Public Affairs Officer, thanks so much, Captain Sipe. It's 15 minutes past the hour now. Let's check in on the headlines.
Grim death count in Haiti. The government now says it believes 230,000 people were killed in last month's earthquake, close to the number of people killed in the Asian tsunami 5 years ago. And the figures are up nearly 20% from the last estimate. Here at home, weather woes are the big story along the East Coast today. Snow totals will vary across the Mid-Atlantic region. Bob Orovec, lead forecaster for the National Weather Service, has some details.
Snowfall totals of anywhere from 6 to 12 inches are expected across the Washington, D.C. and Baltimore metropolitan areas. And as you go farther northward from Philadelphia up to New York City, the amounts are expected to be in excess of a foot.
Hundreds of flights have been canceled in anticipation of what's being described as a major storm.
Overseas in Afghanistan, avalanches have killed more than 150 people along a key road that connects Kabul with the north. Rescuers are working for a third day to reach those still trapped. More than 2,000 people have been rescued so far. We've been reporting about Toyota's problems for weeks, but today Honda takes the spotlight. Another 437,000 cars have been added to Honda's faulty airbag recall. The company is replacing the driver's side airbag in five models. In U.S. retail sales, not including cars, rose more than 3% in January. That's compared to the same month last year. It's the third month of gains in a row. And finally, bring a sweater if you're flying American Airlines. In May, the airline will start charging $8 for a blanket and a pillow on all its domestic flights.
How do they determine
flights?
Oh, we can't charge
look
seven.
At some of the stories you're watching
eight.
This morning.
I mean, how do they figure that?
Coming up, the First Lady's hoping to combat childhood obesity. For tips on how to do that, we actually turn to adults. We've got your weight loss success stories coming up in just a few minutes.
You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Hey, you want that to go?
Our news takeouts this morning come from Washington, come from international business, and we explore a truism. I don't know whether it's good or bad, but people love to talk about weight loss. You know, go figure.
They do.
Later on, you'll hear some of your remarks. But first, we go to Capitol Hill. Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent. The reporters were surprised yesterday when Barack Obama stepped to the podium and delivered an impromptu and surprise news conference.
This gives an opportunity not just for Democrats to say, here's what we think we should do, but it also gives Republicans a showcase before the entire country to say, here's our plan, here's why we think this will work. And you know, one of the things that John Boehner and Mitch McConnell both said is they didn't think that the status quo was acceptable. And that's right there promising.
So Todd Zwillick, Barack Obama talking about how chummy he is all of a sudden with John Boehner and Mitch McConnell, the key Republicans who are fighting him on health care reform. Is this right. plan to bring everybody under a single tent with the cameras rolling going to work?
Well, we'll see. You know, there's a strong indication just overnight, John. There's a new Washington Post ABC poll out that probably sheds some light on why the president is doing this. You know, 57% of those polled said it was a good thing that Democrats lost their 60-vote filibuster-proof majority in the Senate. But an equal number said that the GOP isn't doing enough to find compromises with the president. So this, what this is turning into is a little bit of a game of chicken that the president sort of has control over. Hey, I'm going to reach out or appear to be reaching out. Republicans, your strategy of opposition, which has worked so well so far, this poll also showed that Republicans are gaining in the polls. This strategy that has worked so well so far, see if he can disarm them a little bit and force them into some cooperation. It's a bit of a game of chicken.
All right, well, we'll talk to you later this week to see if anyone blinks at all. Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent.
Let's turn now to Louise Story, the Wall Street and Finance reporter for our partner, the New York Times. And Louise, we heard that China has added another title to its resume. They knocked Germany out of their long-held spot as the world's top exporter. What exactly does this mean? China ready to take over the world?
China is on the rise, Celeste. They had $1.2 trillion in exports in 2009, and Germany only had $1.1 trillion. If you remember back in 2003, Germany surpassed the U.S. in terms of exports. So now China's at the top. Everyone's going to be watching for other milestones from China. It's on track now to replace Japan as the world's second largest economy soon behind the U.S. And then the question will be, when does it replace the U.S. as the largest economy? That's, you know, a lot further off, and it's still a question.
Well, China, they did overtake Germany as the top exporter, but their trade fell last year.
Right, but Germany's exports fell a lot more. Germany exports a lot of its goods to the rest of Europe, and you know Europe is having a lot of problems over there, and they're not buying as much. And so Germany's fell almost 20%.
So this is a status symbol? Is this a symbolic title that they have, or does this mean something in terms of their future?
No, this is not symbolic. This is real money. This is business. The more that countries are exporting, the more money that they're bringing in for their own residents to educate them and to improve their standard of living. So this is a true change in the economy, and it means a lot for our global economy.
Okay, Louise Story is the finance reporter for our partner, the New York Times.
It'd be interesting to sort of compare the product mix from Germany versus China. You know, the BMWs from Germany, the machine sort of value-added products versus a lot of raw manufactured materials from China. It's an interesting
and
sort of
And we've had trouble
picture.
With a lot of the exports coming out of China as well,
well
in
there,
terms
there
of
is,
quality control. That's an issue.
And Germany's had some problems as well, but very interesting. Our last takeout is listeners crowing about weight loss. And I have to say, some of them made me a little bit nervous here. The First Lady announced that new initiative to combat childhood obesity yesterday, and we thought it's kind of hard for people to lose weight, okay? And we asked, let's get some tips from our listeners, the wisdom of our listeners. Sounds like there was a lot of success stories.
I lost about 30 pounds.
And I've just lost 61 pounds.
Lose 30 pounds in one summer.
I've dropped about 100 pounds, and my quality of life is just so much better.
You know, maybe we should start a cable show here. It's just a sample of stories you're telling us at 877-8-MY-TAKE and posting to our site, thetakeaway.org.
There's a couple of different categories in terms of how people found weight loss success. There's exercising more.
This is Ann Arlen from New York City. My tea is working out four times a week. If I do that, I can eat anything I want anytime. And I get stronger, and it's fun.
My name is Val. I'm from Rhode Island. I just recently lost about 100 pounds, and it's just all about moving. And I'm not eating any less. I'm eating more, but of the right food. Move more, and just keep eating all day.
Also on our weight loss plan from you, the issue of what it is you're putting in your mouth.
This is Allison from New Jersey. I lost weight by cutting out carbs. I don't eat dessert, and I don't drink soda, and I lost 15 pounds. People were wondering how I did it.
My name is Ty. I'm from Hanover, Massachusetts. I became a vegetarian about 5 years ago, and over the course of those 5 years, I've lost over 30 pounds and feel healthier and great.
That is great. All of you contacted us at 877-8-MY-TECH. I love this slogan, move more and just keep eating. But remember, it's the quantity of how much you eat that's important.
My name is Maytel. I'm calling from Edison, New Jersey, and the way I keep my weight down is I take tiny bites of my food and really savor it, and I eat slowly. And by the time I'm done eating, I'm only eating half my food, and everyone else is completely done.
This is Russell Oak from Miami. My advice is to actually eat more. What you need to do is just eat small portions throughout the day, particularly the most important, right away in the morning to get your metabolism going. And then instead of eating three large meals, instead just eat small meals throughout the day. That'll get your metabolism moving and help you burn fat.
And, of course, this is a global story.
My name's John Mark. I'm from Australia. I've moved from Australia 3 weeks ago, and I am amazed at the size of your portions in restaurants. It is, without any exaggeration, twice, sometimes three times the portion that we get served in restaurants in Australia. You could solve problems overnight if you halved portion sizes in this country.
I'll take that portion super small, okay? Here's some advice from the Aussies there. 877-8 My Take, your weight loss tips. It never ceases to amaze me that people love to talk about this. My Take at thetakeaway.org. My weight loss tips? I don't have any. Can't you tell?
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
Coming up, with all the proliferation of electronic media, in Haiti, it was good old radio. It was the technology people turned to the most. The reliability of radio in times of disaster, that's the story we're going to talk about in just a few moments. But right now, let's check in on the top news stories at 30 minutes after the hour. Toyota has another recall to tell you about. 7,000 2010 Camrys have a problem with their brakes, and 7,000 of those vehicles will be recalled. On top of that, government safety officials now say they're looking into a number of complaints with the steering on Toyota Corollas. No official investigation has been opened. Here's Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood.
We are going to hold Toyota's feet to the fire when it comes to these recalls. We are looking into all aspects of complaints that have come to our department.
He was speaking to NBC News. Honda now has added another 400,000 cars in the U.S. to its global recall for faulty airbags. The number two automaker has been recalling cars since 2008. Today's latest expansion includes certain Accords, Civics, and Acuras. In Haiti, the government has raised the death toll for last month's earthquake to 230,000, making the disaster as deadly as the 2004 Asian tsunami. Officials say it doesn't include bodies buried in private ceremonies.
Here at home, former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich heads to court today. He'll face a new batch of charges that he schemed to sell President Obama's old Senate seat and swap official favors for campaign money. In the markets, futures are up. The Dow will start at 10,058, the S&P at 1,070, and the NASDAQ opens at 2150. Those are some of the stories that we're following this morning.
You know, in times of crisis, it's radio that often becomes the real information lifeline. Used to be shortwave radios were the only information channels in far-flung parts of the world during times of disaster. These days, radio is joined by other forms of electronic communication, Twitter, Facebook. We saw all of them out in force in Haiti as people struggled after the worst earthquake there in 200 years. The death toll now estimated at 230,000, which is on par with the Asian tsunami of 2004, where radio played an important role back in 2004 in the tsunami as well. In Haiti, radio ran down the rumors. Radio told people where to get food and medical help and how to reconnect with loved ones. Radio was special during the earthquake, and radio also has a very special place in Haitian culture. It's back in force on the island. Emilio San Pedro is an editor for Connexion Haiti, a lifeline program created by our partner, the BBC, to help Haitians get all kinds of basic information that is still needed since the earthquake. Emilio, good morning.
Good morning.
Emilio is with us from Miami, where the Connexion Haiti is broadcast from. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. And also, Michael Dibert joins us. He's a freelance journalist and author of Notes from the Last Testament, The Struggle from Haiti. And you were part of our coverage in those very early days, Michael. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much.
Describe, Michael, first of all, your sense of the importance of radio in Haiti and the importance of radio information sources during this earthquake.
Well, I would say in Haiti, you know, where newspapers are kind of few and far between in the best of times, I mean, radio plays a particularly important role in terms of disseminating information. And certainly in the aftermath of this really devastating earthquake, some of the stations that were able to continue broadcasting really played a very important role in terms of telling people what was happening with their family members, in terms of telling people where food was distributed, where aid was being distributed, things like that, even though the radio stations in Haiti had also suffered quite badly.
And because so many of the stations were off the air, the BBC saw that there was a need, and here's a feel for Connexion Haiti.
Objectif nou simple, c'est ba information important pour millions haïtiens tremblement de terre là affecté. Information vitale.
Emilio San Pedro, that's a part of a air check from Connexion Haiti. Why did the BBC decide to do this? And you're broadcasting in Creole there. What's the mission of Connexion Haiti?
Well, the mission is very simple. It's to bring that basic information that you were talking about, because even though the earthquake may have happened nearly a month ago now, it's still very early days in the whole relief and recovery effort. So it's still about giving people in Haiti a place where they can talk about the earthquake, because after all, these are all people who survived what is arguably the worst natural disaster ever in the Western Hemisphere.
We were speaking with Emilio San Pedro, who's editor for Connexion Haiti, with our partner, the BBC, and Michael Dibert, who's a freelance journalist and author of Notes from the Last Testament, The Struggle from Haiti. So Emilio had his own emotional story to tell us. There was a program recently where he was able to use radio to reunite some of the people who hadn't spoken since the earthquake itself. And on this program, a young boy in Haiti spoke with his mother, who lives in Boston. This story is going to be airing on the BBC World Service on Thursday. And in the story, the mother was so overjoyed she found out that her son was alive that she broke out into song, singing the religious hymn, How Great Thou Art. Here's a short excerpt. Emilio, tell us the story about the day when the mother was reunited with her son on the air. I mean, what was it like to be a radio host that day?
That was indeed one of the most incredible, and I've worked in radio for a long time here in the U.S. and in the U.K. It was the most incredible day, because for several days we've been getting text messages from this 16-year-old, Pinez Macari, who started texting us last weekend and saying, you know, I need to find my mom. I haven't talked to her since the earthquake, and he lives in Haiti. She lives in Boston. And he sent us a phone number, but it was the wrong number, unfortunately. So we then took the unusual step of actually directing an on-air message to one person. You know, Pinez, you've given us the wrong number twice now. Can you try? We really do want to help. Give us the number again. And he sent the right number. We got in touch with this lady, Simone, who lives in Boston. She's an American citizen. And Simone was, to say that she was distraught is an understatement of the highest proportions. I mean, Simone had not heard from her son since the earthquake. That was about, at that time, 3 weeks. She hadn't spoken to him. And they used to speak every single day. So the day that we called her to tell her that he was indeed alive and that we had been making contact with him, she was overjoyed. She told us that she hadn't eaten or drunk and barely slept for those 3 weeks. And she had her bags packed, ready to go to Haiti. It was unbelievable. They finally did manage. We managed to get them on a phone line. And it was quite an incredible feeling.
And a testimony to the power of radio. Michael Dibert, do you think that this is a moment? You hear Emilio San Pedro there talking about the texting and the interactivity becoming a radio broadcast. Do you think this is a real moment for the kind of coherence of all these electronic media coming together into some form that really does tell the story?
Well, yeah, I must say, I mean, in addition to the traditional forms such as radio in Haiti, I mean, you would be amazed at the role that, I mean, even social networking sites like Facebook played in kind of spreading information in terms of where people were trapped, who was alive, who was dead. And the thing is, I suppose, now the big question is how do we take all these kind of technological advances and use them in a way that does effectively, for example, get aid to people who don't have it and helps people who are trapped. I mean, when I was there, even up to 2 weeks after the earthquake, you know, you still had huge swaths of Port-au-Prince, which had barely been touched, really, by relief efforts. And so obviously that's something that, you know, on the ground in Haiti, radio is working, and perhaps internationally, you know, social networking sites and whatever are working to spread information about that.
And working together. Well, the important radio is important to us for obvious reasons, but it's great to hear this story coming out of Haiti. Michael Dybert, freelance journalist and author of Notes from the Last Testament, The Struggle from Haiti. We're also joined by Emilio San Pedro, editor for Conexión Haiti, with our partner, the BBC, broadcasting to Haiti from Miami. Thanks to you both.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It always seems like disasters, like September 11th. It shows us the power of these low-tech solutions.
Well, these reconnections, these reunion stories that they were describing remind me of the pulling people from the rubble stories that you see on TV. You know, this is something that electronic media can do, reuniting people, creating these emotional moments. It's interesting.
It is interesting. And speaking of emotional moments.
Oh, yes, it's coming up, right? Valentine's Day?
It is. Not important to men often, but important to women and important to couples. And one thing you can do if you're a couple is instead of going out to eat this year, try cooking at home. We're going to be talking about that in just a few minutes. This is The Takeaway. I'm Celeste Headlee.
And I'm John Hockenberry. And Jonas Hosmer, are you there?
Yes, I am.
You got your White House press pass around your neck there?
Nope, but...
You got one, right?
What? I should.
Yeah, well, you've got one, right?
Yeah, I got one, definitely.
Does it say on it that you're 11 years old?
Nope.
But it does say that you're a kid reporter for Scholastic, right? Scholastic News?
Yes, that's big capital letter sign on it.
Congratulations, where you have the lead story about Michelle Obama's initiative announced yesterday, Let's Move, an anti-obesity campaign. She announced it. There was a whole core of reporters there. You were among them. And I'm sure you heard the First Lady say this. Listen.
There is a place in this life for cookies and ice cream and burgers and fries. That is a part of the fun of childhood. Often it's just about balance.
So Jonas Hosmer, one of the people who reported that story, you weren't actually in the room with the First Lady, right? You were sort of outside looking at it on a screen.
I was at White House Live on watching it on the computer, and then I called in and listened to the press conference.
Is it interesting to you how the White House determines which reporters get to be actually in the room and in the photo, and which reporters sort of have to look at these live electronic channels?
I don't know. I think it's actually kind of cool, but so.
So it didn't affect your sense of the experience at all that you weren't actually able to meet the First Lady yesterday?
No.
All right, so what is this story? What's the angle here for kids?
That it's not, like Michelle Obama said, that it's not bad to eat burgers and fries. It's just people are eating them too much, and you want to slow them down and have them once-in-a-while treats.
All right, and she really personalized the story here, and I want to get your assessment of how well you think she did communicating here.
One day, my pediatrician, thankfully, was someone who's already doing what the American Academy is going to do, pulled me aside and told me, you might want to think about doing things a little bit differently. And for me, that was my moment of truth.
So Michelle Obama has had this sort of, you know, tracking obesity happen in her life.
Yeah.
Do you have a personal angle on your story?
Like a definition? Wait.
Well, no. I mean, if you struggled with weight loss, do you, you know, have like that third bowl of Cap'n Crunch in the morning sometimes?
Well, yeah, sometimes. But usually, like sometimes I'll, when I like I go for a snack, everyone wants cookies or like a package of granola bars, and my mom always says, "You want some fruit?" So.
Did you put that in your story in Scholastic?
Nope.
So just the facts.
Yeah.
How do you think Michelle Obama did? And, you know, the interview you really want to get is with those kids, right?
Yeah, I thought the kids of the interview would be it would be kind of cool to interview the kids, not because to see what it was like from their point, but because they were bored to death on the TV.
Interesting.
So I would have seen what they would have said.
That's your next story, Jonas Hosmer. You know, the two kids in the White House sort of bored to death with this presidency business.
Yeah.
That's a great story. Jonas Hosmer is a Scholastic Kid reporter reporting on the Let's Move campaign. You can see his story, the lead story in Scholastic News, on our website, thetakeaway.org. Thanks, Jonas.
Welcome.
Good morning, everyone. John Hockenberry here with Celeste Headlee. Coming up.
Love you.
Love food. Valentine's Day, our food segment this Wednesday, features the Food Network's Gina and Pat Neely. That's in a few moments. They're going to talk about love and food, and we're going to have a little Barry White on the show this morning. Right now, here's a check of leading stories that are coming up to 48 minutes after the hour. President Obama says he's willing to sign a health care bill, even if it doesn't deliver everything he wants.
My hope is that we can find enough overlap that we can say this is the right way to move forward, even if I don't get every single thing that I want.
The president also says the nation isn't happy with constant partisan wrangling over legislative proposals like health care.
The public has soured on the process that they saw over the last year. I think that actually contaminates how they view the substance of the bills.
Meanwhile, Congress has opened an investigation into rate increases by the Anthem Blue Cross Health Insurance Company in California. It's asked the CEO to testify later this month.
In Greece, flights are suspended and hospitals are operating on emergency-only service. That's because public sector workers across the country are on strike to protest government measures to tackle the country's huge deficit. And the Japanese carmaker Honda has announced the recall of almost 400,000 vehicles worldwide. That's citing safety concerns over passenger airbags. We're joined for details now by the BBC's Russell Padmore in London. Russell, good morning.
Celeste, good morning to you.
What is the problem with these cars that are being recalled?
It's a bit of a worry, I think, if you're a Honda car driver. We know the company's been recalling its vehicles for more than a year now, but it's doubled that amount. In Canada and the US now, we're going to see 419,000 Civics, Accords, Odysseys, and the small SUV, the CRV recalled. Effectively, the problem is the airbag goes off when you don't want it to. The real danger, metal shards fly out. This is on the driver's side of the vehicle, and this has really worried the safety regulators, who've effectively called Honda to account. I suppose we should add, of course, we're having real problems at Toyota as well. That's probably prompted Honda to do something about it in a much, much stronger way.
And they're worried that they're going to get more recalls and an official investigations, as has happened to Toyota.
Well, we know that in the Honda case, the airbag problem has already been linked to one death of a person and many other injuries. Toyota itself, we know, is recalling 8 million vehicles around the world, a faulty gas pedal on some of them. It's not very good if you think the gas pedal sticks down, you can't stop the car. Also, on top of that, we have the Prius, the brakes not working properly, a worry for these two Japanese manufacturers selling cars in North America.
Russell Padmore from our partner, the BBC. Those are some of the stories we're watching this morning.
On Valentine's Day, romance usually starts at the table. How many restaurant reservations are made for Valentine's Day?
Thousands.
Hundreds of billions of them, yes. Couples go out to a special restaurant. They gaze into each other's eyes over someone else's cooking. But what about bringing the romance right into your own kitchen?
You just want to flip it. And remember, we had butter on it, so it should come right out.
That's my man.
Woo! Oh, give me some, girl.
Good job, Pat.
You are not listening to flirtation there. No, that is true love. Pat and Gina Neely are high school sweethearts and co-hosts of the Food Network show Down Home with the Neelys. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you.
Happy
Valentine's Day to you guys.
We wanted to invite you into the studio in Memphis, Tennessee, where we're on the air and where you're from, right?
Correct. Yes.
And share some of your recipes and really some of your strategies for making the kitchen a place for cooperation, as well as coming up with strategies to really attract the love of your life, right?
Correct.
Now, we don't want to get into the age thing too much, but you guys do go way back.
Yeah, we met in high school. We dated throughout our senior year, and then Pat and I actually broke up, and we got back together at our 10-year reunion. You know, that 10 years, we just kind of marinated and sautéed, and when I saw him, I had to go ahead and whip it on up.
It was a real reunion.
Now, Gina, how did food figure into the reunion and the rekindling of your love?
Well, you know what? Pat is sort of an old school kind of guy, very, very family oriented. And I always say, there are three ways to get a man. You start with his head, you get his heart, you get that stomach popping. So after he ate that great meal of mine that I prepared, that Get Your Man Chicken.
It was on.
It was a wrap.
It's called Get Your Man Chicken?
Yes.
It's called and Pat is a huge lover of chicken. So, it's tooling around trying to think of a way that I can incorporate chicken into it, but kind of make the aroma have a sensuous kind of smell to it. So when you enter my home, it have that smell, and then you can hear the...
Set the stage here, all right? This is the recipe portion of the program. Get Yo Man chicken, chocolate brownie crunch, braised cabbage and carrots with southern creamed corn. That was the meal that really did the deed?
The meal that sealed the deal.
Oh, man.
Better stop, John. Better stop.
Give us you talked a little bit about the spices and the ambiance you wanted when Pat walked into the room, but how did you achieve that?
Okay, so what I did first, I kind of lit some candles. I had me a glass of wine first to sort of settle my nerves down. Because you know what? When you're in the kitchen, you want to kind of relax and even let the aromas kind of feed your soul as well as the person that you're preparing it for. So I started with the Get Your Man chicken, a little wine going, put a little tomato sauce in it, which is kind of similar to almost a chicken cacciatore, but right. Has a little twist to it. Then I went on and did the braised cabbage. And braising cabbage basically means you fry it in the skillet, where it's really a lot quicker than the old-fashioned way of boiling it. Added some carrots for a little color. Got a little cream corn going. Mm-mm, mm-mm. Then I said, you know what? Every great meal needs a little what at the end, a little something sweet. So we did the chocolate brownie crunch. We did a chocolate ganache on top. And I added in a cookie wafer just to kind of throw them off a little bit. Chill that champagne, honey, and when that man ate that food, them candles lit, had that aroma going.
Had some Barry White playing.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, my God. So, Pat, that's the attractive quality of food. There's also the cooperative quality of actually doing it together, in the kitchen. And, in my case, when I start cooking at home, my wife worries about the cleanup. What are some recipes that can keep things simple but keep it all romantic?
Well, you know, you got to work with your wife and your spouse in general. And Gina and I, for years, even before we started having kids and when they were little, you know, if she got home before I did and she started preparing the meal, as opposed to me coming in, plopping down on the sofa, I would immediately come in, wash my hands, and jump right in. If she had potatoes going, I would start mashing them, or I would start pulling the meat out of the oven or putting it in. And so we always just kind of work.
Listen, you guys are too much, man. Look at that. Whoa, turn down the thermostat in that studio.
Be there, right?
Here's the thing, though. For me, this food can be a source of tension because not only is he a terrible cook, but, you know, we don't agree on how healthy the recipe should be and whether or not, you know, pizza in and of itself constitutes a full 3-course meal.
You know, cooking is like a dance. You lead, I follow. There's a lot of compromising that goes on, finding your strengths and weaknesses. Like, I don't like to chop onions because I have terrible allergies. So if you notice on the show how Pat does all my chopping, and I may be working the spices because I like to mix it up. So what you do is you sort of find your strengths and weaknesses, just like in a relationship, where you can find, because most times you'll find that if you don't get along in the kitchen, more than likely that bedroom ain't so hot either.
Oh, man, that's great. All right, so Pat, let's get your loving in the oven menu, and all this stuff's going to be on our website.
Well, you know, we had the flank steak.
Nice.
And then we had the garlic mashed potatoes.
Excellent.
And to top it off, guys, you've got to have some strawberries. So I would make a chocolate syrup, which was more of a fondue. And then I would turn around and dip the strawberries into the chocolate. And I would feed Gina the strawberries.
Oh, that's good.
Which is a tribute to his meat and potatoes.
That's good. Well, it sounds like it's working very well, guys. Finally, any dishes that are things to absolutely avoid if you're going to do Valentine's Day at home as a couple?
First of all, you don't want to do things that are too complicated. Now, I won't be trying to fix my man no collard greens on Valentine's Day. Right. Let's just cut that out altogether. Maybe go with the grilled asparagus, something that's a lot lighter. Any kind of stews where it just kind of requires a lot of work and a lot of chopping, because you don't want things that are too heavy that's going to kind of weigh it down. Because if you weigh his stomach down, you're going to wear it the whole night will be weighed down. So you don't want that.
I definitely
don't
want.
Keep it light in the air.
Keep it light.
And feeling good.
Keep it easy.
It's one thing that I'd like to say is that cooking is just like a marriage, as Gina alluded to earlier. It's really about, you know, you guys working together and preparing a great meal that you both can enjoy.
If you make manwich, make it great. Who cares what it is? Just make it great and make it with love.
Pat and Gina Neely, co-hosts of the Food Network show, Down Home with the Neelys. Thanks so much, and happy Valentine's Day. I mean, I don't know if that relationship's going to last.
Oh, I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a little... That's a little...
Happy
a little,
Lover's Day.
Feels a little happy. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you want to take a look at some of those recipes, you can go to our It's a bad berry.
Yeah, it's very bad.
You can go to our website, Gina and Pat's recipes, including Get Your Man Chicken for Valentine's Day at thetakeaway.org.
I'm Celeste Headlee.
And I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway. No matter how I try, it's like the more you give, the more I want. And maybe that's no lie.
Thanks for listening to the Takeaway Podcast. If there's a story you think we should look at or a conversation you'd like us to start, drop us a line at 877-8-MY-TAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.